The date is February 14th, 2004, and we are watching Zebra Man!
Zebra Man.
Welcome
Zebra
to
Man.
I used to
Zebra
like
Man.
This one.
Zebra Man. Zebra Man.
Zebra Man!
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and while Colin is off getting Edmonton famous, we've brought back our official substitute co-host, the Zebra Kick, to my Zebra Punch.
Hello, I'm Aaron Knowles. Don't stand behind me, because we're striping evil.
Oh boy. So here we are with our strange imports month. I figured I waited till the end of last episode to mention it. Why don't we mention it right off the bat? So do you have your passport, Aaron?
I do.
So it's time for us to take a trip from South Africa last week with The Gods Must Be Crazy. And we're going to Japan because this week we're looking back at Valentine's Day. What a romantic movie. Valentine's Day, 2004, when the movies in theaters were Catch That Kid, Miracle, Lion King 1.5,
wow,
50 First Dates, and of course, our movie for today, Zebra Man, which earned $3.1 million on a mystery budget. Looked all over all my usual sources, pulled in all my contacts from the dark web, could Ooh. Not find out what the mystery budget of this movie was. So it might have been a blockbuster.
I love how elusive this film is. Like, yeah. You literally have to scrub the internet to find anything about it.
Yes, this was a very challenging movie to research. And I mean, I was also even fascinated by the fact that much like The Gods Must Be Crazy last week, this one took several years to get to America. This 2004 release date is the Japanese release date, but the Americans, it didn't hit you guys until 2010.
Yeah, and it didn't start streaming. Oh, I mean, I would say I couldn't even tell you when I first saw it. But I know it came back to streaming in 2020 or 2021.
Yeah.
So that's when it finally came back to streaming. But I really wish I could tell you how I know about this movie.
Well, we will get there very soon, very soon. Yeah. So I like to think that maybe the budget of this movie is whatever change they found in the pocket, in between the cushions of the couch. And it's an absolute blockbuster, much like the Blair Witch Project. You know, they made it for $50 and a promise and somehow came out with $3 million, you know, whatever that is in yen. So yeah, I don't know.
Well, like a hoof to the face, the spoiler alert is gonna hit you like you wouldn't believe
and cave in your skull. Yeah. So speaking of tough research for this movie, I've got three taglines this week.
Really?
Maybe. This one was weird. Like, I ended up on one site that is not familiar to me that I think I might have found maybe some taglines, or maybe they're just the catchphrases. I don't know. But and the other thing is, I even went to a copy of the poster.
Oh,
because I noticed that above the word Zebra Man on the poster, there was Japanese writing.
Yes.
And I threw a Google lens over top of that. And
really?
All it is like the director's names and stuff.
Yeah. It's so like, I want this poster.
It's a pretty cool poster.
It's a badass poster. And it looks like it says way more than it does.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, all that Japanese above where it says Zebra Man is all just the director, the producer, the writer.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Okay, so it might be a zero tagline movie. The last time I had that was Ernest Scared Stupid. I've only ever had one zero tagline movie on this show, and it was Ernest Scared Stupid. So we're going to throw three at Zebra Man's. Maybe it is. Okay, number one, don't stand behind me.
I like it.
So it is a catchphrase, but maybe it was a tagline.
Or both. just both. Yeah, it's worthy.
The way it was presented on this website I found, it strikes me as maybe it was a tagline. Well, number two, criminals are a fearful, superstitious lot afflicted with equiferosophobia.
Fear of horses, huh?
Fear of zebras.
Ooh.
That one's, yes, that's the fear of horses is just the equiphobia, or maybe it's equus phobia, but the equiferosophobia is what makes it a fear of zebras. Yes.
God, interesting.
So, I mean, that's a big word to pull out if that's not part of some sort of catchphrase.
It sounds correct.
You know, again, on the site that I didn't recognize that, you know, I should have thought of actually writing down so that I can give credit to this site. But, well, finally, this one actually may be the only legit one. Striping Evil.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Cause they showed the poster, and then underneath in letters, it's letter, you know, off the poster in English was Striping Evil! ! Almost like that was the translation for the poster. That's how it was presented to me.
Yeah. Presented so, well.
Striping Evil. It works. It does work for this movie. So
maybe I'll make, you know what? Maybe in order to practice my, you know, digital design skills, I'll make my own Zebra Man poster.
There you go. Yeah. Well, we haven't learned much about this movie except what the fear of zebras is. So let's go to Aaron and get a 60-second synopsis.
All right. I've been waiting for this one. What is the guy to do when his kids hate him, his job sucks, his wife is cheating, and everybody in town is losing their damn mind? That's right. He builds himself a superhero costume. Come on. Yeah, don't pretend like you've never done it. No? Just me, then? Well, Zebra Man is about a lowly spirited man who just can't seem to believe in himself. But then the aliens attack, and there's no one to believe in other than the striped hero. No, not that one with the shitty tasting gum, but Zebra Man! Alongside his trusty boy in a wheelchair, he gains all the confidence he can muster to become what the world needs. And that is a superhero with a strong back kick, sweet moves, and a suit that'll knock Zack Snyder's socks off. Throw on a badass heavy metal soundtrack, awesome practical effects, and you have the superhero movie that you never knew that you needed. Zebra Man will put a hoof mark on your forehead if you think stepping out of line. Striping Evil.
You know, if you know, you know. That's what this episode is. If you know, you know.
Yes.
Oh, boy. So this is the part where I always talk about, oh, boy, Zebra Man. Here's my history with this movie. That's it. So, Aaron, let's hear your origin story with this Japanese superhero classic.
Yes. All right. So here's the best way I can condense this story. When I first joined the army, I went to Germany, and one of my buddies who I made friends with, I'm still friends with him, he introduced me to, like, basically import, like, Japanese, Korean, Asian films.
Okay.
You know, yeah. Machine Gun Girl, you know, Suicide Club, Battle Royale, if you've ever seen Battle Royale, you know, like, all of these ones that are just fantastic, phenomenal. Generally, they tend to be, like, over-the-top violent, and, like, their gore and practical effects is some of the best I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. It's phenomenal. The whole, like, there's a whole industry for it over in, like, the Asian film industry.
Yeah.
And Zebra Man just happened to be one of those ones that I came across while doing all this research. And I want to say that I went to an old-school, like, German retro movie store, records, CDs, DVDs, and I found Zebra Man there, and I was like, man, this looks, and again, most of these are kind of terrible, and I just love shitty movies.
Oh, and everybody does, or everybody should.
Everybody should.
There should be a soft spot somewhere for, oh, this is so terrible that, like, there's a reason hate watching is a thing.
Exactly. So, or like what is it, The Room? You know, is
Orzo or whatever his name. Yeah.
So I took this home, you know, because I bought it alongside a bunch of, Wolf and Cub films. If you've ever seen, you know, Wolf and Cub, I love those. Lone Wolf and Cub, excuse me. But yeah, I took this home, threw it in the DVD player, watched it, instantly fell in love with it. And ever since, and that was the other thing. It was, you know what? I just remember that I've seen this before then. This was this was high school, like 2002, 2001. I'm remembering I saw this before then. I think it might have been on like the Sci-Fi Channel or something on television. I remember I just had a weird recollection. You ever had
a flash?
Just remember sitting on that couch and watching it because I remember the moment. There's a moment that is so obnoxiously amazing in this movie, and it's when, what do you call it? Like a transformation into a creature at the end of this film. And I just remember, like, he's literally absorbing lasers and shooting them at this creature. And I'm like, what the fuck am I watching? And I loved it since then. So that's actually when I first saw it, was like 2002, 2001. And loved it since then. Thank you for helping me rediscover that.
2000? No, it didn't come out till 2004, though.
Oh, 2004. Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. When did? Okay, maybe that's, what do you call it? Maybe that's one of those mandala effects.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah.
Man,
I'm sorry I had to check your work on that.
No, you're good. Yeah, check the work. Yeah. I'm having like a wave of memories. I just remember seeing this.
Yeah, because even if you found it before it actually hit, you know, mainland USA, it wouldn't have been 01.
Huh. I'm gonna have to think about this because I feel like this might be attached to some deep-seated trauma or something. Either way,
that would make sense.
Either way, it's a phenomenal movie. It is a phenomenal movie. So,
well, here, let's jump into Zebra Man. Let's zebra jump our way into Zebra Man. Directed. Directed, we're going to have fun with names here. Have you ever been to Japan?
No, it's my dream, my dream destination. I've always wanted to go.
Yeah, see, I went back in, like, 17.
Okay.
And, I mean, first of all, the Japanese are a much better people than we are. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put that out there. Oh, my God. Like, you just walk around there and you're like, these are just nice people. Everyone gives Canadians a good time. No, we're dicks. The Japanese are the nice people.
Are you dicks compared to the Japanese? For
sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we still are probably nicer than some people, but I meet some real assholes every day. I'll tell you that much. But
I'll say this. The from my experience, the Canadians are nice. The Quebecois are assholes.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, there's a certain French arrogance. But we're talking about Japan right now. No, I have been to Japan. I did a couple weeks there, and we hit, you know, Kyoto, Yokohama. We passed through Yokohama. Anyway, but the point is, the one thing I discovered when I was in Japan is that I do not know Japanese. And so I can look at how something is spelt, and I'm completely wrong once I get there. Like, there's a district in Tokyo that I thought was called Akihabara until I found out it was Akihabara, right? And then there's a volcanic town we visited that I thought was Hakone, and I found out it was Hakone. So all I'm saying is, find our ignorance charming when it comes to pronouncing names this week, I think.
It sounds like we're putting a lot of the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So I'm just, you know, as we go through the names, we're going to be throwing names out here. I don't know how to pronounce any of these. So anyway, that was just a long way of saying directed by Takashi Miike, maybe? Produced by... Okay, so this is what I don't understand. When I look, again, this movie, already off the bat, throwing me off... I look up producers. When I list producers on this show, I always find the person that it says is, like, produced by. Mm-hmm. I don't usually list the executive producers and, you know, the people, like, the produced by, the people that are, like, boots on the ground with these people most of the time.
Hands on.
I can't find that in these credits because they have what is called a planner. What the fuck is a planner when it comes to producing? I don't know. So I listed the executive producers because there was no produced by. So it's Takashi Hirano and Matsuru Kurosawa. Isn't that the same name as the guy that did like the Seven Samurai? Matsuru Kurosawa?
I'll double check. Give me a second.
It's not the same guy.
Yeah.
That I did look up. Is it the same filmography? But Like, are there two Matsuro Kurosawas out there?
No, it's Akira Kurosawa.
Oh, okay. See? Again, maybe I don't speak Japanese.
Maybe cousins.
maybe. Or maybe there are 17 million people in Tokyo alone. Yeah. No, 32 million. That's what it was. Is the city of Tokyo had the same population as my country when we went there. So
damn.
32 million, yeah. So, and finally, written by Atsuru Watabe. And so, do you want to hear the literal one piece of trivia from IMDb for this movie?
Absolutely.
During the introductory section of the film, Shinichi Ichikawa, Zebraman, is watching a parody of Super Sentai Power Rangers where the hero fights Sadako Yamamura from The Ring.
Yep.
Ironically, this seems to predict the plot of the 2007 film Kamen Rider The Next, which features a Sadako-like antagonist and a plot similar to The Ring.
Yep.
That is the one bit of trivia from Zebraman on IMDb.
I loved it because it was the most obvious thing, but it was just the funniest thing because, like, the girl is, like, doing the backflips into the little well.
Yeah. But I guess the fact that they're linking it to a different film as well.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Now you have to go find Kamen Rider.
Yeah. And again, that's one thing that I love about these films. Is, again, I'll tell you one of the ways that I know that I used to research how the films that I would want to see. I'm sure a lot of people do this, is like you go to Amazon or IMDb or whatever, and you look up a movie that you love, and you go to like movies like this, or, you know, others have searched
people
this.
Also, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So like I did the same thing, and that's how I discovered a lot of the movies that I really love. And I have a nice little small collection of like import stuff that I absolutely love. And like, again, this was a perfect reason for me to pull Zebraman off the show. I think this is one of those movies that I'm just going to gush all over it. I hope you don't mind, because like, I know I'm going to save all my thoughts till the end. But this is one of those movies that you should watch like once a year, at least.
Yeah. Well, okay, I mean, I've been holding my cards close to the vest. I mean, this is one that I knew you were giddy about me watching. I mean,
hope to God you didn't hate it.
I sat down. I even watched it with Tracy. You,
ooh.
You have plunged this movie onto two different people now.
Yes.
I loved it.
Yes.
Okay. So
yes!
I will get that out of the way. This is the kind of, I get it. So I mean, don't worry. Like, I'm sitting there watching the first 5 minutes of the movie. You've seen the first 5 minutes of this movie many times, I'm sure, right? So I got to this point where the Zebraman logo comes up on screen, and I paused it, and I took this note. This is my first note. Okay, so I'm 5 minutes into the movie, and I haven't taken a single note because I've seen a zebra walk by, a guy that says his cock itches in an onsen bathhouse, and the story of alien invasions, and then like a Power Ranger versus the Ring Girl. And I have to ask, what the fuck are you making me watch, Aaron? And then the little cubbyhole full of aliens and Zebraman. Here we go. What the fuck? Right. So that was my first impression of the movie. Now, I will say that I have watched many a movie, one on this show, in fact, that we did, The Hunger, which was this weird vampire movie with David Bowie. And the first 5 minutes was just so
bizarre. Yeah.
That you're just like, what the fuck am I in for? And then they pump the brakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay. And I settled into it, and I was taken along with the absurdity of it. But I will say that you had me absolutely stunned for that first 5 minutes, that I'm just like, what? Like, how do I even take notes on this? What is going on? Is this going to be the whole movie? I'm glad it wasn't.
Yeah.
I will say, if the whole movie had been that first 5 minutes, like, that would have been too much to take. That would have been a little bit, you would have needed to take breaks, and you would have needed a towel to, like, you know, wipe your forehead. Like, that would have been too much. But yeah, they throw you into it really hard, though.
Yes, they do. So one thing that I wanted to kind of point out and give you, like, kind of a point of reference with this movie is, I know that one thing, like, that kind of drew me into this was the relatability of Shinichi's character. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who around the time that first saw this movie was really like trying to figure out if I wanted to get into like cosplaying or not, you know, if I wanted to take that dive, if I was brave enough to wear costumes outside the house, I hope you can see where I'm going with this. The entire introduction to Shinichi's character is, and I'm just going to say it is, during the intro, it kind of takes a weird turn because it's like the first like 30 minutes of this film, you know, we get introduced to Shinichi and how miserable his life is and that he's building this Zebra Man costume and to kind of make himself feel whole. And he starts building up this bravery to wear this Zebra Man costume that because of his childhood love of Zebra Man, and you just see him build this confidence. And for me, as somebody who around that same time was like building his confidence into being a cosplayer, I just found it so relatable and it really impacted me. So that's one of the reasons that I love this movie so much is because there's this scene where he goes out and the first thing he does is go and gets a soda from the soda machine in his neighborhood. Oh my
God. Beautiful.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. And that was one of those ones that I went, aw, Japan.
And he sits...
I miss having a soda machine on every corner. The vending machines in Tokyo and all over Japan, like just, they are the greatest thing.
Yeah.
They are a gift from God.
I cannot wait.
But I love that scene. And that's the thing is, it did throw me for a loop because after the breakneck pace of that first 5 minutes, when they did pump the brakes, I don't watch enough Japanese movies to know whether this is a common trait of Japanese movies, but the narrative is very broken. There's not a lot of segues in Japan, or at least in this film.
Yes.
Like, it's just... there's not a lot of explanation going on. And it's like, okay, I'm cool with that, right? Like, I this is okay with me. But it's just all of a sudden he's at school. All of a sudden he's at home again, sewing. All of a sudden he's back at school. All of a sudden, you know.
Yeah.
And it just, the cuts on it were very jarring. It took me a while to kind of familiarize myself with how this movie was going to be paced.
Yes. There are a lot of scenes like that. There's also a few where, and I think it's kind of supposed to, geez, I just spit all over my damn mic. There's kind of supposed to be this, I don't know, I feel like it's supposed to be kind of like a jarring, like almost exciting, almost like, you know, it's supposed to catch you off guard because everything that's going on in this initial portion of the film to the people of this city, of this village, of these characters is jarring. It's like all this stuff is coming out of nowhere. You got all these characters that are having to be like, that are coming out of the woodwork basically, and then clashing, you know? So it's kind of, I think it might lend itself to the narrative of it being a little bit jarring. Whereas there are certain parts where the narration of the actual film or even Shinichi's inner monologue transitions the scene to scene. There were a few like that I noticed that do that as well. But I will say this, there are a lot of, have you watched a lot of, like, I mean, you watched Power Rangers. Have you ever watched the original, like, Sentai, Super Sentai, anything like that?
That's the thing is, I'm just slightly aged out of Power Rangers.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I think I've got about 7 years on you.
Yes.
And it's just, my younger brother, who is a decade younger than me, he was into Power Rangers. So I had them around growing up. But it didn't grab me at the age that I was when they were around. So I'm familiar. And I mean, I was at an age where I was looking at Kimberly, the pink Power Ranger, and going, the things I would do to her. So that's why it wasn't quite, I wasn't the demographic for Power Rangers. So I'm familiar, but not super, you know, deep into it.
Well, the reason that I asked that is because if you to kind of reference those two styles of cinema when it comes to, again, this one is basically a parody of those shows, those characters.
Yeah, like for sure.
The evolution of them from, you know, a basic character to a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that Super Sentai worked so well being transitioned from Japan to the United States was because of those drastic cuts, where they were able to splice in American actors into the normal roles of them being superheroes.
Yeah, exactly.
So it is like if that is one way to confirm that that is a style of their, like, you know, cinematic, I guess, transitions. Then mm-hmm. that would be the best mm-hmm. way that I could explain it. Is that it does. It's and that or
100. No, that 100% makes sense. Is that even if, because I did notice that one of the genres that this movie is given is spoof.
Yes.
And so it very much is that, yes, they're kind of poking fun at this style even. And so that 100% makes sense. It took me a minute to figure it out. But yeah, once I did, like, I love, like, just the training in the beginning, like the whole scene with him, like, trying to practice in his bedroom, you know, and his mission to go get a soda from the machine across the way. Absolutely brilliant.
It reminds me of a recent film that we just watched, Fight Club, where there's that scene where Tyler Durden and the narrator have the gun to the store worker's head behind the store. And he says, tomorrow, or that guy will eat dinner, or his next meal will be the sweetest meal he's ever tasted. And I feel like that's what we're getting from the scene where Shinichi goes and gets the soda in his costume.
Face plants it off the roof.
But he but it showed, like, he's sitting there and he's just, like, chugging this soda and breathing deep and kind of like to
mission
me, I bet you that soda was the best soda that he has ever drank in his entire life.
That's the Avengers sitting around eating shawarma.
Exactly. Yeah. So this movie on a lot of levels hit me very much, like, personally. And that's one of the reasons why I was so engaged with it when I first saw it. And yes, the scene is, and the parody portion of it, you're talking about the scene where he's training in his room and, like, he does the kick and he, like, stumbles a little bit, but he catches himself. And then he, like, kneels down in front of his mirror and he looks behind him and he goes, "Don't stand behind me." And then his suit, like, rips.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's done so well. It's such a good parody.
And again, after the breakneck pace of the first 5 minutes, all of a sudden you're thrown into something that almost feels like it could be, like, Parasite.
Yes.
You know, like, I know we're going from, you know, Japanese to Korean there, but still it's got that arty feel for a while with the whole origin of Zebra Man. Until the point that the aliens come, and then you get into, you know, the Saban Power Rangers shit, you know, and so then it's like, okay, like it leads you into like the movie almost tricks you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I found that wild too.
Yeah. So there's two scenes that kind of come up quickly after he starts actually, like, taking little escapades in his suit. And this is when, you know, we start, again, we've already been introduced to the aliens. We already see, and the one thing that, one character that we have just that jumps out, I don't know, like, if it caught you off guard, was the guy that his daughter is dating, who happens to be this crab helmeted murderer.
Yeah, very, he was off-putting.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was at least twice her age.
At least, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, that guy, he exudes Predator vibes. I mean, yeah, it's one of those, I hope you don't get typecast, Mr. Whoever you are, you know, like, because that's not a look I want.
Yes.
Yeah, he just, yeah, pure Predator vibes.
I feel like we just jumped over the cast all the way.
We did. Yeah, I mean, so let's run this down, because I don't know who any of these people are, but I don't know. I want to see you stumble over some Japanese for a little while.
I'll do my best. All right. This is what Chris generally has me do this on the Oblivion Bar. He always has me do the. But so we have Sho Aikawa as Shinichi Ichikawa, Zebra Man. And I looked up his filmography, and it looks like this is kind of like a lot of the roles that he does. He plays.
He is Zebra Man too, then.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
We know that there is Attack on Zebra City as well. Yeah.
Yes, he is.
That's the thing is, yeah, you wanted me to tell you how this movie was, you know, like, that's the yeah, like, we've been holding it back for a while to talk about this. We haven't traded any information about this. The only things I have said to you so far are, I will definitely be watching the sequel, and Boomerang Scissors. Yes. That's all I've told you.
Which we'll cover the Boomerang Scissors in a sec, because that's again iconic. But yeah, so he seems to do a lot of roles like that, though, in like movies like this, such as like, you know, being a superhero villain, like suited up type character.
Which is fascinating because he's no Chris Evans, you know, or if we want to go for, you know, he's no, who is it that's in Shang-Chi? What's his name?
Simu Liu.
Yeah, like, yeah, if we want to say that he's no Simu Liu, like, it's...
But he's good. I liked him. I think he
No. He's great. He just doesn't have the...
Oh, the presence.
Physique of it. The physique of a super... Yeah, he's not...
He's a dad. He's got a dad bod.
Yeah.
You have Kyoka Suzuki as Kana Asano, the zebra nurse.
Zebra man.
Zebra nurse was... What was the term you threw my way in Super Mario Brothers? The not Yummy Mummy, the
Dommy Mommy.
Dommy Mommy, yes. That's what it was.
Oh yeah, she was pulling some of those guys by like chains and stuff, and she was smiling all about it. Her outfit was definitely chef's kiss.
Yeah, very much so.
Yes. You also have Naoki Yasukochi?
Sure. Yeah.
As Shinpei Asano, who is, he's the kid in the wheelchair. His father has killed himself, like, previous to this movie, and he has since then never walked. Yeah. And there's no physical reason.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's all psychological. Here's my problem with... This, I think, might be what my problem is with the Japanese language, is you look at it and you see Yasukochi... But you feel like you're going to be making a racist accent if you say it properly, which is why you want to hesitate, because it's probably Yasukochi, right? But you sound like you're doing a Japanese accent to say it right, you know?
So for me, I don't feel like that because in my brain, I am already like, I don't do it to be offensive, but the fact that if I did the accent, I would be offensive. I don't personally find it offensive, but I'm not Japanese or I'm not, you know, of Asian descent.
Yeah, you're learning how to say the accent.
Yeah, so,
basically.
But I am also probably, you know, immature to the point where I want to say it in that accent and I find it funny, but it's like comedic funny because that's the generation that I was born in, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, I was born in the, you know, yeah, all that stuff, but...
Japanese is tough.
Yeah.
I remember at my first sushi restaurant in Japan, I decided I'm going to Google Translate. Thank you. That's everything. Can we have the bill, please?
Yes.
You know? And so it was just this one like short little phrase and I listened to it. And then it just, I still fucked it up and they all laughed at me.
You know, I think, you know, it's when we go to another country, there's two ways that you can kind of receive the laughter / you know, happiness of the situation, because in a lot of cultures we go to, when we try the language, they will laugh because it's cute. It sounds like a child trying to speak the language, but at the same time, no matter what, I always feel like there's a certain level of appreciation for trying to speak the local language.
That's what I go for. Absolutely.
I always feel like that because I've always, no matter where I've been stationed, Korea, Germany, you know, no matter where I visited, where it's been Jordan, UAE, wherever, I've always tried to learn basic skills of that language to connect, you know?
Yeah, at least pleases and thank yous and things like that. Yeah, yeah. It's just, it's a tongue twister language.
Absolutely.
No, and it was good natured. Like they were pleased that I tried and, you know, they let me try a few times, right? And
yeah.
They got it. Yeah.
Next up, we got Atsuro Watabe, which they play Oikawa, which I think, so Koen Kondo, I think it's the daughter and his children.
Okay.
Oikawa and Sagawa. Or no, okay. Or they might be, sorry, they might, they're, I'm sorry, they're the agents, the government agents.
Oh, okay, right. Yes. In their tiny little car.
Yeah.
They cramped a little car full of...
their car was like, it looked like it was a wannabe DeLorean, you know?
Yeah, a little bit.
Because they had all this shit on it and all these like little display models and display screens and stuff in it. Because they're looking
inside. It was basically just one big computer,
yeah.
too.
You have Makiko Watanabe as Yukio Ichikawa and Yui Ichikawa as Midori Ichikawa, which that's his daughter. That is Shinichi's daughter is Yukio, and his son is Midori.
Oh, so his wife is Kazuki?
I believe so.
Okay.
And then, I mean, you got Akira Imoto as Kitahara the Crabman. I want to say he's a pretty famous Japanese actor. He actually won the Japanese Academy Award for Best Actor for his performance in a movie called Dr. Akagi.
Okay. And that's the principal or the vice principal?
No, that's the crab guy.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. Right. Oh, I'm sorry. See, I'm already lost.
You're good. he was actually in Godzilla vs. Space Godzilla back in 1994.
Now, for 1978 Zebra Man, Hiroshi Watari is... Now, Zebra Man wasn't actually a series, right, in 1978?
No, it wasn't.
Just making sure. Do you think that they did some stunt casting there? Like, is this like having Tom Cruise as Austin Powers in that opening scene of Austin Powers,
Maybe.
Spy Who Shagged Me? You know, like, it's...
Because this guy, I mean, he's got a few things, but mostly just, I feel like they brought him in because of what he has been in.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like, okay, this is the guy that would have been Zebra Man.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think they did, I think you're right.
That's what I'm wondering. Yeah, that was something that just sort of hit me when I got, I'm like, if this is not a real show from the 70s, and I doubt it is, but maybe it is. Maybe this is some weird soft reboot of Zebra Man from the 70s. I'm like, if not, that's got to be stunt casting.
I loved it because, I mean, to be honest, if you go to Japanese television and look up things like Ultraman, like more of these, this same style of shows, those superheroes are not, like, most of ours were kids or like teenagers or portrayed by teenagers to appease that demographic, to appeal to the young kids wanting to watch superhero shows, right? Whereas in Japan, you know, Ultraman, Super Sentai, like, these were like older people who were like cast in the superhero slots. Mm-hmm. You know, Ultraman, that they were like a whole space force that worked for the government. They were a team of like astronauts and warriors and fighters. And so I feel like I appreciate the fact that they brought this guy in to be Zebra Man instead of like trying to make him seem like a younger guy. But also, you know, if you watch the movie in the show, just like Shinichi's character, Zebra Man is a teacher. He's a school teacher. And so he obviously has to be of a certain age to be the Zebra Man character.
Yeah. 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 You're, not even though I recently, Love is Blind has a new season, and there's this 25-year-old principal.
Let's not talk, like, Love is Blind. We could do a whole nother show on that.
I think we might have some Patreon. But yeah, but still, like, a 25-year-old principal does not make sense to me, because, like, I had an aunt that didn't become a principal until she was, like, in her 50s. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's just, you know, it feels like that's something you really got to work towards. And so, yeah, I mean, you could have a 25-year-old teacher, but it is more believable if it's a dad in his 40s.
Yes. And I will say this, just as a little piece of trivia, most movies like this, most Japanese superheroes, things like that, are based off of like manga. This one only had, I think it was a 5 or 6 issue manga that came after this movie that was adapted to, like, the, it was kind of based off, loosely based off of this movie. It was like a six issues. But it was mostly about the relationship between Shinichi and his kids, and he did have the Zebra Man suit, but he does not get powers in the manga.
Okay.
I actually will try.
I can tell you a few things about manga in Japan. Holy shit! There's some bad aisles you can walk down. Yes. I'll tell you that. We played a game. I had like a brother-in-law, or, you know, brother-in-law-in-law, that was actually living in Japan. So we met up with him one day, and he taught us a game that he likes to play in Japan, which is called Elevator Roulette.
Oh.
Because you get into an elevator, because, you know, it's such a vertical city. Yeah. You get into any elevator, hit any floor, because you can't speak the language. You don't know what those fucking signs say. And you get off and you walk around. And he's like, you did that in the Akihabara district? Holy shit, you're brave. Because, I walked into a couple of bookshops where it's like, ooh, those characters do not look of age.
Yes.
That's for sure. Yeah, things like that. Yeah,
I did a couple of. So I did some I wrote some stories, and I did some. I actually did a paper when I was in college about It was all about mostly the research, but it was about these aisles, these bookstores, and also about these people that they were interviewing in Japan. Because there's actually a trend of people marrying inanimate objects. And I actually watched my reference pieces was a documentary that I watched about a guy who married a pillowcase, a pillowcase of his favorite character. And it actually showed how, you know, he would take it out to dinner. He was very respectful of the character's like private.
Yeah, this is,
you know,
Lars and the other woman. Exactly.
And
all that sort of
and
stuff.
If he had to work late, he even had an additional like extra like version, like smaller version of the pillow case in his like desk so he could put it next to him so he wouldn't feel lonely. And all of it's based off of, we could go way into depth, but it's all based off the fact that because of things like romance shows, soap operas, things like that, the Japanese culture has a tendency to take other cultures, mostly Western, like American culture, and amplify it and emphasize it. And it really affects the development of their youth, much like the internet affects the development of our youth. Whereas it's been so bad that women watching shows like these ultra like romantic shows expect too much from Japanese males. And because they don't find those expectations met, they tend to have less relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, the birth rate in Japan is declining because of the increase in cyber, affection.
Yeah.
Like AI basically has been like, I can get all of the emotional needs I need out of this. I've got this machine over here that takes care of the other stuff. And, you know, there we go. I don't need the baggage that comes with a real person.
Yeah. We as a human race, and this again is another side quest of a conversation, but we're gonna basically start controlling our own population with AI and not needing relationships because we can basically find we can create our perfect partner without having to go through any of the stress. And whenever we're tired or annoyed, we just switch it off.
Yeah, the people that say that Thanos had the right idea. I mean, hey. Maybe Tony Stark had the right idea. Let's just let's bring so much AI into this that people just don't want to procreate anymore.
All right, Elon. Now let's get back to Zebraman.
Back to Zebraman. I think that's kind of wraps it on the cast list too. Yes. I don't know any other names. And I've been talking about going to stores, and we've talked about this vending machine scene. Why don't I just do some sponsorship corner? I know watching it, Tracy said, did you actually find any sponsors? And yes, I did, because, vending machines are well-branded, so there were a few of those, and I found a few things. I may have missed a whole bunch of other things because, I just don't speak Japanese, but whatever, here we go. Always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week, Zebraman is brought to you by Kirin Ichiban Beer, Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola, UCC Coffee, Fila and Puma Shoes, iMac Computer, HiJet Mini Trucks, Honda and Toyota, Motorola Phones, Cup Noodles, Yokohama, where this movie is set, that's where the Cup Noodle Museum is. That is the thing that we did when we passed through Yokohama. Yeah, we went to the Cup Noodle Museum, made our own cup noodles. They were delicious. And the one that surprised me the most to discover was real. All the sponsors this week were real that I found. I didn't throw in any fictional ones. The Fortean Times, which is the magazine that our X-Files agents are reading, which is a monthly magazine of news, reviews, and research on prodigies and portents. That's just wild to me that there is actually this paranormal magazine that exists. I guess maybe after our discussion just a couple minutes ago, I guess nothing should surprise me, but yeah. There we go. And so this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Nice. They're all real, that just makes it even better. I'm surprised you didn't mention the eggplant stand.
The eggplant. Well, see, I don't speak Japanese, so I don't know what that shit says. Thank you.
boomerang scissors real quick.
Okay, so, well, yeah, there. I mean, we've kind of progressed. We've already kind of gone over the fact that our man is learning to be Zebra Man. We haven't touched the school story much yet, but, well, yeah, so his, but as Zebra Man, this actual Zebra Man story, his first real quest comes when he hears a scream. He comes upon a dead woman, and we encounter our first real villain of this movie, the Crab Man, and with his boomerang scissors.
Yeah. Well,
the guy that the murderer that has been going around killing people with his 8-inch scissors. That's our first villain.
Yes. And even Zebra Man doesn't really know what's going on, because like there's this interesting scene right at the beginning of the fight where the Crab Man is like, he's like, who are you? And he's like, Zebra Man, who? And the crowd guy keeps getting closer every time he says who, and he puts his face up to him. And finally, when Zebra Man says Zebra Man, like he tries to stab him with the scissors. And I just thought like that was a very like anxiety building, like anticipation building scene.
Yeah, why are you so dumb, Zebra Man?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, we can see what he's coming. Yeah. Like, I understand he might not be able to hear because of that big thing on his head.
Yeah.
But come on.
But as a viewer, like, I felt like a kid. I wanted to be like, look out, Zebra Man! You know?
Yeah, look out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That, I know. I felt that as well. And I also like the fact that I'm like, I'm so smart right now because I noticed the mask in the daughter's boyfriend's bag.
Yep.
I know that this is her boyfriend, her scumbag, fucking weird pedophile, creepy ass boyfriend that she has. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then
her skirt when she, ugh.
Yeah.
He was disgusting. Ugh.
Well, he goes for the knife stab, you know, to stab Zebra Man, and Zebra Man miraculously,
he's got skills. His practice paid off.
Yes.
And I'm like, really? And then I realized what was really going on there. Yeah, he somehow got imbued with powers. That's the one leap of logic I had to just go with on this movie, is where his powers actually came from.
Yes.
Is it the woman that's sitting with the hairdryer on her head in the first 10 seconds of this movie? Is that where he got the powers from? Because he keeps getting ominous warnings of it won't last long, it won't last forever, use it while you have it kind of thing. Where did they come from, though? That's the only missing link for me. But whatever. I've just rolled with it.
I feel that, you know, if I were to give an idea of where this power came from, I would say it was just the sheer fact that this guy he needs to believe, like, yeah. And like, he has to be like, he's imbued with it because he believes so much that he can do it. Like, truthfully, anybody could be a superhero if they believed enough. But this guy just happens to be the one person that like discovers like his calling and truly believes in it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, that thought only lasted for about 30 seconds until the boomerang scissors came out, and then I went, oh, okay, no, it doesn't fucking matter.
It doesn't, that's the beautiful thing about it. At no point in this movie do you care where this guy gets apparently zebra powers from.
Apparently they're just in his helmet, because he has to crawl for his helmet at one point to get his zebra powers back, and that's when he powers up into the bigger suit even. The helmet he's been painting himself the whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, boy, what a painstaking process. See, this is why you have to be a billionaire like Bruce Wayne, because otherwise you're sitting around at, you know, like with a sad desk lamp painting by hand the eye sockets of your Zebra Man mask. I mean,
I'm not going to lie. This movie has inspired me multiple times to want to make an actual like Zebra Man costume.
Oh, him putting it on for the first time, it's like, it's such a time-consuming, intricate process, but it's like, you know, I've seen people get dressed up in their extravagant cosplays. I've seen those videos online, you know, like when the guy comes in his Groot costume. Yeah, that takes about 20 minutes and four people to put on.
Oh, my God. Well, they were talking, who is it? When you watch the new Dune movie, the guy who plays Baron Harkonnen, they said it took him 8 hours to get into full makeup and then 2 hours to take it off.
Yeah.
And he actually took, what was it, like certain medications like Imodium so that he would not have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, you start at 3 a.m. and, you know, you don't shoot till noon.
Yeah. Well, let's, okay, you said we hadn't talked about the school kind of subplot. Let's talk about that, and I'm just going to go through the entire, like, subplot of the school and kind of, like, round it all out.
Yeah, yeah. He's basically daydreaming his way through work.
Yes.
Right? So a lot of it gets summed up that way.
Yes. But the background of the school is this, and we find out that it's actually the principal who was kind of the catalyst for all this. So we find out at the beginning of the movie that the government is actually, they're aware of this alien presence in this town. They send the two agents to investigate and find out what's going on and basically gather intel to see if there's something else that needs to be done. Along with Shinichi, the agents, and everything going on, we find out, like, the aliens are already there. They're actually in the school, in the auditorium.
The school was built on top of the, yes, on the top school, of their crash site.
The alien crash site, which, come to find out, the principal was the perpetrator of the crash that brought the aliens down. He's a rogue alien. Well as, not only did he prophesize and create the Zebra Man television show back in the 70s, but he also led the coup of other aliens to stop this alien invasion. So that's why he's, you know, as the time draws near, he's starting to lose control of his alienness because it starts leaking out of his butt, apparently.
Yeah. You know. That old chestnut.
That old chestnut. I think it's an analogy or a metaphor for getting older.
Yeah. Yeah, your poops aren't always gaseous.
Yes.
Your farts aren't always gaseous.
Yes, always gaseous. but then we have we have the show, and that's when, you know, when the kid comes in, I'm gonna remind myself of his name, Shinpei. When Shinpei comes in, he informs, you know, through his narrative process, he informs Shinichi as well as the audience that 2010, the year that this movie is set, is the year that Zebra Man comes into existence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
yes, it's been prophesied
and it's been foretold through television. And so
I like the fact that the future time they gave this 2004 movie was 2010, and that's when it actually dropped in the States.
Yes.
I found that delicious coincidence.
The way that they built all this stuff together, I think, is unlike a lot of movies and plots that we've seen, and they really put a lot of thought into it, and the detail orientedness of this movie is apparent.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, through all of this, Shinichi finds out about the prophecy. He starts looking at the scripts that the guy has written, and he comes to find out that he is actually also going to possibly die at the end of this movie, at the end of this battle with the invading aliens.
Unless he can learn to fly.
Unless he can learn to fly.
That was one of the scenes that I definitely found jarring, is like, he takes off on his motorbike, and then all of a sudden, next time we see him, it's like, why is he all beat up? If I hadn't been watching this on, like, a legitimate site, I would have been like, did I lose a scene somewhere? Did I just have, like, a blackout for a second there? Like, what's going on?
But yeah,
then
that was confusing
eventually,
as well. Yeah,
eventually it gets explained. Oh, no, he's been out here learning how to fly for the last 2 weeks.
Yes, he's been climbing trees. And this is after he even saved. So he saved his son, who now has a newfound faith in him.
Yeah.
Basically, he goes out, like you said, into the wilderness. He starts climbing trees and bridges and trying to learn and trying to will himself and believe that he can fly. Mm-hmm. And I think this is, again, this is just an amazing scene that seems so, like, silly and, like, dangerous and, like, I don't know. Because you have this contradiction here. You have this side where it's like he's already done some amazing things as Zebra Man himself. He's already saved people. He obviously has been imbued with some kind of power. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But then he can't believe that he can fly. And that's the one thing that he needs to achieve in order Yeah. He's got to achieve that in order to really reach his full potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the scene where he decides to go for it off the bridge. And then, like, the X-File agent comes up and finds him floating in the water and just stands there and stares at him, like, you know, he's face down in the water. And then the next scene where we have them on the bench and he's just kind of slumped over, like, he's just defeated. Zebra Man's been defeated by gravity.
The other thing that I forgot to mention that I absolutely love also is the fact that he has some kind of, like, zebra sense.
Mm-hmm. And his hair bristles up.
And his hair bristles up, and they keep making fun of him, calling him like Bedhead. But it's almost like a mane where it goes, and it just like puffs up, and it's so great. It's such like a simple effect.
Yeah,
that is so interesting to me, and I love it. And again, yeah, like you said, he gets to the point where he has to believe and he has to save, you know, the kid and. Oh, yeah. So, like, we get to the point where it's kind of like the penultimate, the apex of the story. Things are culminating. The aliens have kind of taken over the school. The government is aware that this is the last-ditch effort. They've called in a neutron bomb
from the USA.
Thank you, Mr. Bush.
There we go. I don't know why neutron bomb is just so much funnier to me, though, than
atomic.
Any other kind of bomb they could have had.
Yeah.
Like, just the fact that they chose neutron as the... Now, I mean, maybe that was just the dubbing.
Yeah.
And that's the most direct translation that they have. But I just neutron. I don't know. I think neutron dance.
Well, I love the silliness of it where it says, like, neutron bomb in Japanese, but then right underneath in English it says made in USA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I love that.
There's a lot of that goes on in Japan, though, where you get the English. And, I mean, of course, finding the slogans on shirts where it's not quite translated properly, those are just as much fun. I love those as well. But
oh, God, yes.
My favorite thing about Japan is picture menus. They know that there's a lot of times that it's just easier for people to point. Yeah, I want ramen dish number four. They've got a beautiful picture of it, and it shows up, and it almost actually looks like it did in the picture. I mean, truth in advertising. They give you, they're giving you, you know, Instagram photos of their food, not you know, airbrushed, you know, injected with glue to make it look shiny. You know that, yeah. Back to our crazy people episode, but. But yeah, the one thing also, though, I mean, yeah, we're the this school storyline, like, we're like, let's talk about the school. It has somehow already brought us towards the end of this movie. And I hate that we're rushing through the movie this fast, because we haven't even really mentioned the weird relationship that he got from his school, where it's this child that he has befriended.
True.
He is now the mentor of this child. They're friends now.
Yes.
Like, he wants to give him the respect of, can I call you, what's his name again? Like, Hashiro's son? Can I call, you know,
Mr.
like...
Asano.
Yeah, so they're, you know, he's now got a little buddy, like, through this little kinship over Zebra Man. And I think they almost did this character, though, the main Zebra Man character, a disservice by making him married. Because, like, I know his wife is cheating on him, but the fact that he forms this bond with this other kid, it makes me feel bad for his own kid.
I see that. It's... But I don't see it as it being like, I think that's the reason that he calls him Mr. Asano, because it's a respect thing. He respects this kid's maturity because this kid has been through what he's been through. You know, it's not a familiar
guy in the chair.
Yeah. It's not a familial relationship. It's like, it's not him like being like a paternal, you know, like element to this kid. You know, the kid doesn't need a father figure. I think the kid needs a friend, and he needs somebody that he can confide in, because, you know, again, these guys are both, I would say, like, victims of their own, like, victims of their situations, you know, because neither of them did anything wrong. They just happen to be, like, in a situation that is, like, not great for them. They're not, they have no confidence. They have nobody to really see what their passions are. And I think that's where it becomes a friendship, where, again, you have this mature young kid who's seen death, who's dealt with it. And you got this guy who, you know, is nostalgic and has a love of something that he had from his childhood. And they kind of, again, they bond over it. Yeah, it's kind of an odd.
Yeah, I guess no one questions why a 16-year-old kid hangs out with a, you know, 60-year-old nuclear physicist in Back to the Future. So I guess I shouldn't necessarily question why this 40-year-old wants to hang out with a 12-year-old. Okay, you know, that's fine. I guess I look at the fact that, you know, there is electricity between him and his mom, though. Absolutely. I mean, like, they are setting it up for, you want him to be with this mom and this kid, and you want that to be his family, and that's why I get sad for his own family, because he is ignoring them. He's having this emotional affair over with this other family, and so
is he? Because he's clearly, I mean, okay, I'm not advocating, and I do see it. There's definitely a connection there. There's definitely some like a spark between him and the other mom, you know. But
Aaron Knowles does not advocate infidelity. That's what we're saying
yes,
here.
But I will say this: his family, we see in the entirety of the beginning, he is trying to be a part of this family, and nobody wants him around. His kid won't talk to him. His wife won't talk to him. She leaves and comes back at all times of day and doesn't respect mm-hmm. him. She's probably cheating. His daughter doesn't listen to his rules that he puts into place. So if they clearly don't want him around, you know, yeah. it's not like he is not trying to be involved. He's doing it. We see him putting forth the effort of like talking to his kid over dinner.
Yeah.
You know, he's trying to, he is literally trying to leave the situation in order for his family to be better off without him.
That's true. Yeah. And I mean, in the end, they kind of all come to I guess it takes becoming Zebra Man for them to realize what they had all along. And by then, it's too late.
Exactly.
It's too late. He's going for Zebra Nurse, I think.
He absolutely needs to. That outfit.
I have to see the sequel, but I'm afraid I'm probably going to be disappointed that he and Zebra Nurse never end up together. But I don't know. We'll see.
No spoilers, Aaron. But it goes. It's batshit crazy. It's a wild movie. It's such a yeah.
Okay, well we can get back on the main plot then. Yes. I mean, you know, like we did jump over a bit, like in the fact that like all this, you know, because we did get to the point where he's learning to fly. We did jump over all the beautiful montages and beating up though that he does along the way, like. There are some nice the guy that he turns into a pretzel with a kick.
Yes,
I mean that was
there was the horseshoe shape on his face.
Yeah, and then the cleanup crew comes in with the three flamethrowers.
Yeah,
a bit
overkill.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I like that. And part of the relationship with the other family that the kid and the Zebra Nurse, we find out that, you know, like when he stays for dinner, that's a bit of a weird scene, but we find out he's a bit of an herbivore lately. I enjoyed that line as well. But yeah, so eventually though, yeah, he's kicking ass all over the city. People are turning to slime. The principal ends up getting taken over. So now it's really come down to Zebra Man to save the day. Mm-hmm. But because of the scripts that you had mentioned earlier, yeah, absolutely. He is not ready. He does not feel he's ready. He's going to lose in the end.
But he knows that he doesn't have a choice. And so two things happen. He hides the script from Shinpei, saying that he's going to die because he doesn't want the kid to find it.
I love the prophecy script idea. Yeah. Like just the, you know, this is the idea that you see in other movies where it's like, well, if you know what will happen, you know, will you live it differently? I mean, this is Final Destination in a way.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it also reminds me a lot of the most recent Ghostbusters, not this Frozen Empire one, but the one, the Afterlife, where it's like the, you know, something clearly happened was a big deal for some people when it was on TV when they were younger, but the current generation has no idea about what's going on.
Just complete, like, yeah, collective block in the in society right there. Yeah.
So then we have the issue with the school. The aliens have taken over. The government has shut down and set up a blockade.
Sorry, one more thing. Sorry, with all the montages and everything, I will say that the one scene where we get the kids on the bus.
Oh, yeah.
Bus full of kids that start going and fucking up stores.
RoboCop
and, like,
2
being,
style?
Yeah, being little riot, you know, yeah, exactly. Just causing a bunch of menace around town. My first thought was, are we going to see a bunch of murdered children here? I was worried that we were going to get a bunch of murdered children, but the fact that, yeah, it was his son, it was one of them, and we found a way that we can actually get the aliens out of the body, I guess. Yeah, so there is that moment. The kid, I mean, I like the moment where his own son has, like, he's obviously shell-shocked, got all this PTSD, and when they're sitting on the porch, I like that little exchange between him and his son where, you know, it ends with, you know, go get him, dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like we never as the audience, we never got to revisit the kids.
At least the daughter, especially. I mean,
I meant the kids that were beating up the fucking the booth guy.
Oh, the rest of them. Yeah.
He just grabbed his kid and ran.
That's true. Yeah. And the other guys were all locked and loaded with their flamethrowers. So
well, there might be a bunch of burned up kids somewhere.
Yeah. The dark side of Yokohama.
There was. I mean, I was going to say that might have been China. The one children rule.
Mm.
Got to start over. Yeah. but yeah. So yes, he figures out how to take the kid. He finds saves the kid. He he saves his son. Goes to the principal's house, finds the scripts.
Yeah.
Takes the scripts back to Shinpei's house.
Where did that envelope come from with the mysterious set of keys inside?
I think the principal knew what was going to happen when he went to go check on the
oh, and sent
in the
it
gym,
off to
and
him.
he put it under his desk, like under his stuff on his desk for him to find. Because the principal knows. The principal is alien that had the prophecy, so the principal knows.
And you mentioned the bristle, like the zebra sense. Yeah, there is the moment where the principal witnesses that, and then he's like, "Wait, whoa, wait! I know what's going on now."
Yes, exactly. You don't need your bag to go to the bathroom.
I'm fascinated by the structure of a Japanese school. I don't know whether this is accurate to a Japanese school, but the fact that they've got the one room that's just all administrators. For individual grades, like he's the grade 3 administrator. He's not a grade 3 teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like a supervisor of the teachers.
Yes.
Like it's just, I don't know if this is just a Japanese school system thing or whether it's, I'd say it's gotta be, but I can't say when I was in Japan, I toured any Japanese schools. That would probably have been weird. I would have probably been escorted out, but I'm fascinated by the fact that each grade has its own administrator. That's just wild to me.
They got to keep those kids in line, you know?
That's true, yeah. But so he finds the keys, he goes and finds out the principal has a very unusual home. I was wondering, it took me a minute to catch up because at this point we didn't know the principal was an alien yet. I don't think we knew he was a rogue alien yet. And so when we come into the room, I'm like, is this some sort of way to block?
We did. Okay. Because remember, he was having the stomach issues. And then at one point he put his hands in his pants and he had like the green slime.
I thought maybe he was possessed. I didn't know he was an alien. Okay. But either way, when we got to this room, I thought maybe this was a Japanese version of a tinfoil hat, right? Yeah. When it's all rice paper on all, every single cube of this room.
And a weird tripod system holding up a singular goldfish in a bag.
Yeah. Yeah.
I still don't know what that's about.
It's weird. Yeah, it's a science that I don't understand. Very advanced science.
Yes.
The baggie full of goldfish, yeah. Yeah, and he sits down on the floor and just reads scripts for a while because he sees that he has all the scripts to Zebra Man, and we start getting all the pieces put together. It was smart in that way. That's one thing I enjoyed about this movie is as dumb as it was, there is a smartness to it with how it's set up with, how we learn about the information in this movie, right? Oh, okay. Scripts. Oh, okay. He brought in this show to find out in the end that the show was there as a warning to the people of Earth. And unfortunately it just got shit canned before they could all be made.
and even to go one step further than that, the magazine that they find, like where all of it's coming out from, that magazine is the same one that the guy had in his apartment, that the principal had in his apartment, where he had been writing letters for years about this alien invasion.
Yep.
So, it's all there.
Yeah, he's been trying to stop it for years, but no, Judgment Day is here now.
Yeah,
though. And so, they do try to protect the kid from the prophecy, but unfortunately, Cinderella still finds that
Sleeping Beauty
spinning wheel,
the
thing to prick her finger on. Yeah. And finds it anyway, no matter how hard they tried to hide it from him. He'll never find it. No, the kid finds it. And so he ends up going to the gymnasium to investigate. And so now Zebra Man has to save him, but he can't fly.
Yes.
I like how the agents get on, or at least the one agent gets on board with Zebra Man in the end. Like, just, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Oh, here he comes. Like, we got everybody out of the way.
Yeah. Who is that? It's our secret weapon. I love that scene. Weapon.
That's love a great that moment. Scene. I love that moment. Yeah. And then like ends up stealing the mom, you know, Zebra Nurse's bike and, you know, just like, hop on. Let's go get your kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, he just commandeers the bike.
Yes. Yeah. And then he gets to the gymnasium where the kid's being held by the alien creature, and he's getting his ass kicked, and really the last thing that he needs to do is really like truly believe in himself, like mm-hmm. like the aliens are kicking his ass, like he's doing what he can with what he's learned and gained so far as far as power.
He's kicking those CGI blobs against the yes. wall like nobody's business. Yes. But they're still,
it's not enough.
Yeah, I mean, you could always say, would you rather fight one adult or 10 infants? And, yeah. you know, it's like, well, yeah, I could just kick those infants. But if you have 100 infants coming at you,
yeah.
eventually it's just too many infants to yeah. kick.
Do you want to fight a horse-sized goose or 7 geese-sized horses?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, like, he even uses, like, some of his best moves, like the zebra through.
I'm now thinking of a bunch of geese-sized horses running around. That's adorable. I mean, we've got a lot of Canadian geese here, obviously, yeah. in Canada.
Those things are
mean. They're terrifying sometimes. If you get too mean. Close to them, yeah, especially when their babies are around, fuck.
You know what's what else is, like, extremely mean?
Huh.
Swans.
Oh, okay.
They are brutal. They will rip, like, if you ever, like...
Oh, and you've got some floating around in Central Park out there, yeah. don't you?
They will, like, yeah. if you try and feed, like, ducks and stuff around swans, like, swans will, like, rip their wings off. Like, they will rip them apart.
Wow.
They are brutal creatures. They are brutal creatures. Don't fuck with swans.
Well, yeah, it's just like, we didn't even bring it up in The Gods Must Be Crazy, but the fact that, you know, the most dangerous land animal is a hippo. And it's like, oh, but they're so cute.
They can crush. They're
dangerous
strength.
As fuck. So yeah, he's being overpowered by aliens, though. He's being overpowered by all these little blobs, and they're joining forces. These blobs, yep. as he's smushing them, they're reforming,
Station.
And they are They are absolutely leveling up. Yeah, and coming together, and. Coming together, all this slime just coming together.
Oh,
it just movie. Yeah, I know. My mind went there. I don't know why. Well, because I'm a dude. But yeah, so eventually he ends up rescuing the kid out of the ball of slime, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well. He rescues him once he's getting his ass kicked. He's crawling across the floor. He's had his helmet knocked off. Finally, he's got to push through whatever last bit of obstacle is holding him back. And he grabs his mask, and when he grabs the mask, the Z starts lighting up, and he just...
Right, how could I jump over that?
Yeah, he starts... Fuck. His cape wraps around him, he starts spinning around in this weird cocoon-typed cape, and he, like, leaps up in the air, he starts spinning on top of these mats. The zebra spin, and then all of a sudden, boom! He is the legit
Level up.
Zebra Man, in his actual Zebra Man costume/armor, and it is at this point we get the badass Zebra Man like metal music, and it just kicks ass from there. It's so good.
We've been watching Peter Parker swing around in his homemade costume for the entire movie, and now we get the upgrade.
Yes,
and it was worth it. It's a nice suit once we get, you know,
it's a badass suit.
Yeah, and so, he starts kicking ass as Zebra Man saves the boy. And then we find out eventually, like, he ends up running to the rooftop and, you know, like, all of the aliens have merged into one giant fucking Godzilla-type alien. You know, we've got our Kinju, is that what they're called? Kenju? What's the Godzillas
Kaiju.
And the Mothras? Kaiju, yep. Thank you. Yeah, I was close. I had most of the right letters. Yeah. Yeah, or Stave Puff Marshmallow Man was one that definitely hit me with this movie.
Yes.
Was because just the way, especially when he hits him at the end, you know, it's just, there was just something very Stay Puff Marshmallow Man about the climax of this movie.
You just reminded me of a movie that I used to enjoy when I was a kid that giant monster kind of looks like. It's a movie called Spaced Invaders.
Yes. But yes, Spaced Invaders. Yes, that's up there with the Flight of the Navigators of the world. Yeah.
He transforms into the actual Zebra Man, and he's got the gloves and he's got the armor. He just looks completely badass. And he doesn't really fly. He kind of takes off and he jumps through, does a zebra screw thing, and then saves the kid.
Yeah. Kicking heavy metal ass, saves the kid. And then he decides on the rooftop, though, that he can't do anything.
Yes.
Right? Like, he's just, he can't fly, so he can't win. And this is when the kid, in what looks like, I thought it was an incredible moment of acting with this kid, where it's like, it looks excruciating to stand up, but he stands up to prove that you can fucking do anything.
Yes.
You're Zebra Man.
Yes. If you believe it, you can fucking do it, Zebra Man.
Yeah. And so he goes after the alien, and then I have in my notes, whoa, he just turned into a fucking zebra Pegasus.
No,
that
you
can
jumped,
shoot lasers.
You jumped You jumped over the fact that the alien throws the kid off the roof.
Right.
And he has the longest descent from a maybe 4 or 5 level building.
I'm sorry. Yes. How could I have jumped over that? Yes. That's when he learns to fly. His cape comes to life like it's Spawn.
Yes.
Batman hang glider.
I got goosebumps in this moment. I started this is the moment where this movie turns completely badass and you get goosebumps from how cool it is. He jumps off the roof, catches the kid because he believes, he flies, he drops down in front of the mom, gives the kid over to him, and then takes off to go kick some serious ass.
Yeah. See, and because he's married, though, that's where he should have gotten the kiss from the mom. Go get him, Zebra Man. You know, a kiss and a quick hand job. Yeah, and then he flies off, and yes, and then he turns into a fucking Pegasus zebra.
Shoot
lasers.
Pegazebra.
And that's when I said, this is amazing.
Yes.
And then with his fucking Pegasus laser, he brands that alien like motherfucking Zorro, takes him out, burns him to a crisp, and wow.
I feel like he absorbed the energy from the alien, and then that's what he uses to power himself up to turn into this fucking zebra, this Pegazebra, and fucking, just Zorro's this dude's fucking forehead and he explodes. Yeah. And then there's this badass scene where there's the moon behind him and he's just floating in midair, just levitating as fucking Zebra Man, looking super badass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I there was the one scene with the guy in the alley where he's just standing on the fire.
Yes,
escape.
I wanted to bring that up because it's almost like an awkward moment, but it's also still kind of a very confident building moment. You're talking about the arsonist.
Yeah, where he ends up running down the fire escape afterward.
Yes. Right?
He's striking this very imposing figure up on the fire escape, and then the guy runs away, and so he trots on down the fire escape, where it's like, if this was Batman, he would have jumped, but he was so early into his Zebra Man career at that point. But I love the moment where he runs down after the guy. But yeah, at the end, now all of a sudden, yeah, he's like super Zebra Man.
It's so
striking, that silhouette. He's,
and I don't know if it was on the way that you watched it, but I would say one thing, if I ever saw a remastered version of this movie, I would want them to up that heavy metal music so much more. It was way too subdued. It was so badass.
See, now I'm gonna have to scour the depths of the internet to find that heavy metal music to put under your 60-second synopsis.
Yes.
it's out there. Yeah. So, and then in the end, Zebra Man just gets arrested for destruction of property.
I feel like this was more of a this was like one of those government type setups You know, so like, yeah, there's this, it's an interesting conversation, but you know, it's Shinichi and it's, I want to say his name was, I think it was Atsuro.
See, all of my notes throughout this, I've got wheelchair kid, yeah. I've got zebra nurse, I've got X-File guys.
Yeah.
Right? Like I didn't learn any names. Like,
One of the agents, the one who is not an alien, is not set on fire. He is in the back of his truck and they're having this moment. And it's a really interesting moment because he's wearing Zebra Man's mask. And he's like, so what am I being charged with? And he's like, you know, destruction of property. And he's like, you know, he basically tells him, you know, like they're not necessarily waiting for you, like they're kind of waiting for Zebra Man.
Yeah.
So don't. And then he actually tells him, don't oversell it too much. So that's where I feel like this is just like kind of like that behind the scenes conversation where they're telling like Batman to come accept the key to the city, but don't like over fucking do it, man, because we know you're gonna get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. And so he gets out of the truck, walks him through the crowd up to what I think is I would say like a courthouse.
Courthouse or jail.
A jail, like some kind of government building.
Maybe even a police precinct. Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody, the entire crowd's out there. They're Zebra Man.
Zebra Man.
His kids, his wife is out there. He gets to the top of the stairs and he looks back and he sees the kid on his crutches. He's walking kind of. The zebra nurse is there and she's like, Zebra Man! And the kid's got a weird hand. He's like, Zebra Man! You know? And all of a sudden, Zebra Man like spins around and he's in his full zebra suit and it's awesome. And then he just
breaks the handcuffs.
Breaks off the hands and he's like, Striping Evil.
Yeah.
Man, yeah. I was like, fuck yeah.
And I went, yes, you are. Yeah, that's how I ended this is, yeah, you are. And, you know, at the end, it's like, I'm like, yep, now I know why Aaron wanted me to watch this. Yeah, like I kind of like the consequence aspect of it though. Like that is kind of funny how in the end it's like, you know, it's like the Avengers getting arrested and thrown in their island cells, you know? Like it's you did a lot of good, but like you fucked a lot of shit up, man. Like we got to at least talk to you downtown about this.
Yeah, yeah. let's make it look like we're holding you accountable. That's basically what it was.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. The pictures during the credits. Is this something else the Japanese films do? I was wondering whether that was basically them showing a visual credits before they actually got into the actual credits scroll.
I don't know, because usually when we see that in American cinema or, you know, at least Western cinema, they show like the name of the actor and their character
with it. Yeah.
But they didn't do that at all. So this is just kind of like an awkward photo album.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just weird family memories at the end. Yeah. So I opened up my phone and I watched the credits through Google Lens because they were all in Japanese just to see if there were any credits that jumped out at me. There was nothing that jumped out at me, but
Zebra Man, Zebra
Man, it was fun. Yeah. So there we go. Yeah, that's Zebra Man. Now Aaron on IMDb, it's scored 6.5 out of 10. Has a Metascore of 62. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 57% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 68%. But Aaron, those are just numbers. Like a zebra kick! Hit us with some reviews!
Well, this actually only has 14 main reviews on the Rotten Tomato. Only 14! I mean,
well,
like real
now
reviews.
Now I know what my download number is.
Not necessarily. Now, there's 2,500 plus on audience ratings, but, you know,
Oh, okay. So actual critics review.
Yeah. Okay. So some of the ones on right, yeah. So you got like 3 out of 5 stars. Weird superhero comedy that never really manages to shine. Okay.
I disagree. It shines like a glowing red Zed.
Somebody
or
said
Z for our American listeners,
they gave him a 4.5 out of 5, but they said it's moronic. It's dumb. The bad guys look like little slimy green fetuses, but man, it's just so funny. I love this movie. I stumbled upon it while going on a Sundance Channel bender with my mother. We both watched it and we could hardly breathe because we were laughing too hard. If you like silly Japanese films, I'd recommend it. I'm currently on the hunt to rent the sequel.
I mean, they talked the slimy green aliens, but oh my God, we didn't even talk Green Baby.
Oh yeah, the Green Baby. That thing was so nasty.
Oh, so much going on. And it was prophesized.
It was
scripts.
Prophesized, yes. Somebody gave it a 1.5 out of 5 stars and said, nothing happens for the first 85% of this film. And when something finally does happen, you realize it was done much better than Full Metal Yakuza, which I'm not really sure what that is.
Isn't that the Japanese gang?
Full Metal Yakuza sounds like a movie, but the Yakuza is the Japanese mafia.
Exactly,
for sure.
Yeah.
Maitland McDonough from TV Guide gave it a rotten review, I guess, and said, we'll probably play best to fanboys who love Power Rangers and Ultraman. Mm-hmm. I feel attacked, yet so true.
Yeah. I feel attacked, but seen at the same time.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Thank you.
How could you say something so audacious yet true? Here's one from IMDb. It's a little bit longer, but it says they gave it 5 out of 10 stars. All right. So basically, you know, it's 50% rating. The lighter side of superheroism. Great for the first hour and 20, but needed some serious editing. First off, I'm just going to say fuck you to Logan X-2 because this movie is perfect. A normal family man and school teacher who is despised by his family. I mean, he just gives the whole review of it. But like, that's really the only part that's actually like a review. Mm-hmm. It says our school teacher finds himself putting on the suit and attempting to fight crime, failing in spectacular comic fashion at first before going into kung fu hustle overdrive, which I kind of love.
Yeah, and the Kung Fu Hustle reference, I mean, I did ask you beforehand, I asked if I would be doing myself a disservice by watching it dubbed instead of subbed, because I did have both options, but I thought I would only have time to watch it once this week. And so you said, no, I don't think it matters, because Kung Fu Hustle is one of those that I pointed to as... It is funnier one way than the other, and I don't remember which one it is. I think it is subtitled that's funnier, but it might be dubbed. I just don't remember. But back when I worked at Blockbuster Video, I would recommend Kung Fu Hustle to people if they wanted something that was silly. And I would always recommend to watch it the one way. I just don't remember which way that was.
I feel like this one's amazing either way. Like, I just want people to experience the movie no matter what, dubbed or subbed. They just need to experience this film.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, pretty much.
The final part of this guy's review said that the problem is it's just too long. It's charming, unique, but the charm just doesn't hold past an hour and a half. One of Miyake's more accessible movies, but still chock full of the absurd images and surreal humor fans have come to expect. Good watching from Miyake fans and those interested in the lighter side of superheroes and nostalgia. Others stay away.
See, it's that name, the Miike. That's why I did my little disclaimer at the top of, you know, take my ignorance charming as charming, because, you know, it's I don't know how to pronounce two I's in a row. That doesn't make any sense.
Miike,
to me.
I think. I don't know.
It might be.
Yeah.
Miike.
This is the last one I'll read because I do like this one. This is Zebra Man Kicks. This guy says that I watched Zebra Man at the IFFR in Rotterdam, and it was a coaster ride from beginning to end. I've seen a few movies by Miyake Takashi, and they all had had elements of gore and typical Japanese over-the-top violence. Not this one, though. From the first second up, it's totally wicked. It has all the elements you've seen in the sort of action figure-based movie, but in the hands of Miyake, it turns into movie magic. In a nutshell, goodbye Hollywood, Sadako rocks, America doesn't. I don't know why I read the America doesn't part in, like, Trump voice. The story about a failed teacher family man daydreaming about his alter ego Zebra Man, who, after construction of his duct-taped superhero outfit, gets more than he could ever have hoped for, will keep you on the edge for the entire length of the movie. Those of you familiar with Miyake's previous work do not need to despair. It wouldn't be Miyake if there wasn't any blood, body fluids, or slurry involved. But I can't tell you anything without spoiling, so go see!
Yeah, well, you decided on the pronunciation you were going with before you went into that review, thankfully, because, I don't know. It just makes me think about, that's not Mike, you idiot. It's Miyake. That's a girl's name.
Yeah.
Eurotrip.
Yeah.
Right on. Oh, boy. Zebra Man.
Yeah, man.
I get the 60s. I understand the 60s. It's a terrible movie. It's the CGI is laughable. But it's the right type of silly. It's everything. Like, it, you know, like, I understand the 60s because, come on, it's such a dumb movie. But it is also one of the greatest movies I've seen in a long time. It was so fantastically B-movie. And it's been a while since I've sat down to watch a good, like, you know, silly B-movie. And it was well done. I found that I went on a few roller coasters through this movie, for as cookie cutter Power Rangers as it was at times, you know, there were some legitimate moments that hit me in the feels.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a lot of fun. The development of the character I thought was so much fun. As far as like superhero origin stories go, I think this has become one of my favorites that I have ever encountered because of the everyman quality of him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's got a very kick-ass feel to it.
Yes.
You know, there, because on top of the Power Rangers, there is a kick-assness quality to it of this character leveling up throughout the movie. But it's like, it's the underdog that you're really rooting for. And I mean, as silly and outlandish as so many things were in this movie, it made just such a beautiful pile of shit that I loved every moment. Such a polished turd for me. I love this movie. I'm glad you have brought me back to Japan. That was another thing that I just loved in this movie, was just that feeling of Japan, because Japan was a happy couple weeks for me. That was a really good time, and so was this movie. Yeah,
good.
So Aaron, I know that since we last talked, you have watched this movie at least twice. And you say it's an annual movie that you like to touch on. So latest impressions of Zebra Man. I don't think this is going to come by any surprise whatsoever, but hit us with them.
You know, I love hearing you describe it, especially as a newer watcher of this film. It slightly is a pain in my soul when somebody calls it like a terrible movie, because I agree. The thing is, I agree, but at the same time,
I mean it in the most loving way possible. I love terrible things.
Yeah, you're saying it endearingly.
This is one of those ones.
Yeah.
You can find the joy in this.
Absolutely.
Everyone should be able to find the joy in it. Like, Tracy didn't quite get it in the same way that I do, but she had fun with it.
And that's all that matters. It's like having a little bit of, you can joke about the movie, you can have fun with it, you can find the endearing parts and the emotional like connection of the characters. You can be wowed by the sheer insanity of turning into a flying zebra. Like, there's something that everybody can pull from this movie. And it's so, like, again, I as many times as I watch it, again, I'm not gonna lie, I still get goosebumps at that final battle and what occurs. And
why did I have to live 45 years of my life before I saw a fucking zebra Pegasus?
Right?
Like,
it's such a good, I mean, it's such a cool and amazing experience, even if the movie does not present itself to you as being a cool and amazing film. I just think that everybody, this is one of those films that is so slept on and so unknown that the world needs to see it.
I've already passed that on. I've already paid it forward, because I was at a show last night and I ran into one of the people that's been on this show before, David Owen, and he's the one that brought forth that Hunger movie that I was talking, the weird David Bowie.
Yeah.
I've watched Wicker Man with him. He always brings me these weird movies, and I'm like, if you like Japanese, Zebra Man, it will not disappoint you, and there's a sequel, Attack on Zebra City. I'm like, you know, I will be watching the sequel. I'm like, I'm talking about it tomorrow, and I haven't watched the sequel. I almost threw it on immediately, and I'm like, no, that'll fuck with me. I've done that before. With Young Guns, I did that. I watched Young Guns 2 immediately, and it fucked with my recording because I was mixing up things from the second one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, with a movie I don't know, I need it to be the only thing that I know. And so, I mean, I look forward to watching Zebra Man 2 Attack on Zebra City in about half an hour when I'm finally got everything saved on the computer, and I will be turning it on.
Well, I'm excited
if
for
not,
you.
If not, then it'll be tonight. I will be watching that movie soon.
I will hold all remarks until you message me and let me know once you've watched it. I am, again, anticipation is just immense in me right now, and I appreciate it so much that you enjoyed it, and you know, again,
I've embraced it wholeheartedly.
Exactly, like it is, and thank you for passing it on. The world needs to know about Zebra Man.
Yeah, there we go. Can't be said any better. There we go. That is Zebra Man, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, I mean, I didn't step on you. There wasn't anything else.
No,
you
no,
had
no.
To
you're
say
good.
In your
you're
final
good.
Thoughts? No, okay.
You
yeah, if you like
thought.
That show, yeah, your final thoughts were spread all throughout. If you like that show, well, you know, tell people, right? Like, if I were to get ads to promote this little hobby podcast, I mean, that's one thing. But people don't listen to ads. They listen to you if you say, "Hey, listen to this show." I mean, that's how people watch movies like Zebra Man.
Mm-hmm.
So just tell people, word of mouth spreads so well. The importance of a show? No, the I don't know. Word of mouth is important. Or go over to whatever app you listen to your podcast on. Give us as many stars as you can, because you know, people also notice that. Or if you want to be a financial supporter, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and you become an executive producer. So you get a shout out like Joshua Blum at the 13th Hour Podcast. Or if you have any suggestions for the show, if you want to hear your own Zebra Man, whatever that may be, what is your Zebra Man? Email it and we'll watch it. We'll talk about it on the show at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Visit our website. Find us on social medias, because I have fun making memes.
I can't wait for Zebra Man memes.
Oh man, that's gonna be fun. And of course, a big thank you to substitute co-host Aaron Knowles. Aaron, where can people find you doing things that aren't this?
Well, thank you again for having me, as always, Sean. You guys can find me at the Oblivion Bar Podcast. That's the Oblivion Bar Pod on pretty much any social media platform. You know, just talking about nerd stuff, talking about movies, up-to-date news, comics, video games, all that stuff. You can also find me personally at Better Actions on pretty much any social media platform. And, you know, usually I'm talking about video games, or I'm, you know, participating in some kind of event with you know, the streaming community. So,
and of course, Colin is off doing his show. Colin, where are you?
All right. If you're in the Edmonton area from April 17th to the 27th, you can find me performing at the Walterdale Theater in the production of The Swearing Jar. I play Owen. It's been a lot of fun picking up some new skills, learning how to play the guitar. So would love it if you came out and watched it. And if you do, I hope you enjoy it. Drop me a line and let me know what you thought.
Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy. Okay, Zebra Man out of the way. The other one that you have chosen is now, my hold is available at my library, so I just have to go pick it up. So I'll have that ready. But next week I'm getting my strange import choice. So we are gonna fly down under. We're gonna go from Japan. We're now flying down to Australia. And we're going to do a movie that I mentioned back in our Memento episode, because this one features Guy Pearce.
Yes.
We're going to do The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Bunch of drag queens driving across the desert in an RV named Priscilla. So this is the movie that I would say inspired Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar. And I've always held up is the better version of that, but I have no idea how mid-90s how mid-90s Pride is going to hold up. I think this is still a celebrated movie in the Pride community, but I don't know how. I remember a ping pong ball trick that we'll see if that's still funny to me. Have you ever seen Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert?
I have, but it has been a long time for me.
Yeah, so we got Guy Pearce, we got Hugo Weaving.
Yes.
Yes, and yes. Terrence Stamp.
Jeez.
Yes, the original General Zod, Terrence Stamp, is
I also this is a star-studded cast.
He's the old queen in that one. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to this because it's been a long time since I've seen this, but it's one I found in high school when I was in the drama theater scene in high school. I was a theater nerd. Yeah, so there we go. Yeah, so until next week, I'm Sean Wells.
And I'm Aaron Knowles.
And we'll see you for Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, on I Used to Like This One. More strange imports. I didn't even say strange or imports again. Fuck. So bad at my theme months.